the Age of Vision radio show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. From 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, here on UCY.TV radio, we relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. Today is May 22nd, 2018, and I do not have a guest with us today, and I have intentionally left some days open because while I love interviewing guests, there is a lot of news to talk about on the nuclear front, and there's a lot of things to discuss with our listeners, and that's kind of an interesting thing because we're not really sure how many listeners we have out there. Because we're an internet radio show and there really is no way to track it. So for all of you listening, we really appreciate it. And I want to thank our listeners at kepw.org for tuning in to our radio show. I believe it's currently playing at 11 o'clock at night on kepw.org on Monday and Tuesday. And I don't know what time on Thursday, but they do play it on a time on Thursday. So we want to thank everybody for joining us. I wanted to announce, I think I'm going to change the name of the show at the end of June. I'm not going to keep the Age of Fission radio show. And I think that has, the Age of Fission has kind of, because people have this negative block towards nuclear because of the friendly atom bombardment we got in the 60s and 70s tied up. You talk about fission and people just, bink, shut down. And the point of me doing this every day or however often I do it, and like Dave, I do at least 8 minutes a day. You know, I'm talking about Dave from Operation Save the Earth, a website that you guys should go to. I'm hoping I can get Dave back on pretty soon. I loved our last conversation. I haven't had a chance to connect with him, but I love his ideas about it just takes 8 minutes a day. And let's call the people who they are, the real ones, the bad guys, because that's what they are, the bad guys. This is one of the bad guys. I found another story by one of the bad guys, James Konka, of course, in Forbes magazine. He is hired by Forbes to sell the friendly atom. This is his latest article. What is the date? May 22nd, so it's today, 6 a.m. He produced it today, just today. This is what it says. A deep hole may be just what our nuclear waste needs. Wow. You think? How long did it take them for them to think about that? They're calling it deep isolation. Let's see. Should I read this article? I really hate giving this guy air because he really... I will read it because we need to see what the liars, how the liars rock, essentially. When Deep Isolation's chief executive officer and co-founder Elizabeth Muller thinks of fracking wells, she isn't thinking of natural gas or oil. She's thinking a great way to dispose of nuclear waste. And there is a sublink to the nuclear waste, like it's in, you can look at the link on nuclear waste. I'll click on it and see what that pops up. DeepHub's Isolation is a recent startup company from Berkeley by Mueller and her father, Richard, that seeks to store nuclear waste safely at a much lower cost than existing strategies. The technology takes advantage of recently developed drilling technologies that place nuclear waste in a series of 2-mile-long tunnels, a mile below the Earth's surface, where they'll be surrounded by very tight rock called shale. So tight that it took developing fracking to get any oil or gas out of it. So what he's leaving out here is in fracking, what they used was nuclear waste to blow it up. Can you tell I really despise James Konka, guys? I think he is one of the very bad guys. We're using a technique that has been made cheap over the last 20 years, says the elder Mueller, who is a physicist and climate change expert at UC Berkeley. We could begin putting this waste underground right away. I'm not actually opposed to putting it underground. We've got to do something with it. Once a climate change skeptic, Richard's work in climate change confirmed to him that climate change is real and caused by humans. In fact, like all leading scientists, the Muellers now argue that the world must increase its use of nuclear energy to slow climate change and help understand the solving and help understand that solving the nuclear waste problem would help. You think? It happens to be one of the most toxic substances man has ever created. Wow. Okay, back to the story. Since paralysis has defined our nuclear waste disposal program over 10 years, this may be the time to discuss alternatives. Even though the U.S. House of Representatives just passed H.R. 3053, the Nuclear Waste Policy Amendments Act of 2018 to reopen Yucca Mountain Project, it seems dead in the Senate, thank God, and is just way too expensive given that we just picked the wrong rock in 1987. And so in 1987, he has a link to this and it goes to a PDF about them having picked Yucca Mountain. It was an article he wrote in 2012. Deep borehole disposal of nuclear waste is not new, although Deep Isolation is the first to consider horizontal wells. I don't know, so that means they're going to drill big, long tunnels. We've been discussing deep boreholes for years, along with other strategies, like this generally accepted deep geological disposal, or the dropping the waste into an ocean trench, or deep in the Antarctic ice sheet, transmuting the waste by bombardment with high-energy particles, or even shooting it into the sun, thought of but discarded pretty quickly. Deep borehole disposal is one of the few strategies looked at by the President's Blue Ribbon Commission on America's Nuclear Future. Wow. This is the scary part. Let's open that tab. We'll come back to it. President's Blue Ribbon Commission on America's Nuclear Future that was formed to come up with a new strategy in the wake of Yucca Mountain's closure. Their recommendations were basically to pick disposal options suited to the waste and the need, and to get everyone to consent to them before you start. You think they care? The key aspect of deep isolation strategy is to use the drilling technologies recently developed for fracking oil and gas deposits. We have become so good at this, America now produces more fossil fuel, gas, oil, and coal together than any other nation. There are single drill rigs that can drill a dozen stringers horizontally off of different directions that can open up tight formations for miles and can even pick themselves up and walk to the next drill site. Do these people not even give a doggone about the earthquakes they're causing, about the geologic disruption, about the poisons they're putting into our groundwater? So adapting this technology to nuclear waste may be pretty easy. The Muellers emphasize that they are keeping their drill hole simple. We're not doing anything experimental when it comes to the drilling, says Elizabeth. We are using horizontal drilling methods that have been proven over the past few decades. For now, the Muellers are focused on disposing of the commercial nuclear fuel, leaving the defense or the bomb waste to DOE, who correctly wants to put that in a separate repository. Deep borehole disposal is simple. Drill a very deep hole, 1 or more miles, put the waste in it, and fill it up with some special layers, but mainly crushed rock, asphalt, and concrete. As geologists, we know how many millions of years it takes before anything can get up from that depth in the Earth's crust. Really? As geologists, that's how we know? And how do we know that it's not going to get into our groundwater, sir? Okay, back to the story. Most previous discussion of deep borehole disposal only considered vertical holes, but it's cheaper and easier to drill horizontal tunnels in shale. With advances in fracking technology, the drill holes can fit 1 foot diameter, 14 foot long canisters. 1 foot diameter, 14 foot long canisters full of nuclear waste. Wow. Able to hold a single-use nuclear fuel assembly. They actually have a link to watch it. Drilling the holes takes a couple of weeks at most, says Elizabeth. Even better is that, unlike other strategies, no humans need to go underground. The nice thing about horizontal drill hole disposal is that it doesn't matter where you put it in the country. At that depth, with billions of tons of rock between the waste and the surface, you're so deep in the crust that the overlaying rocks don't matter. The water table doesn't matter. The climate doesn't matter. Human activities don't matter. And we have lots and lots of shale. Are you telling me they plan on drilling the holes, taking the shale out, and putting the nuclear waste in these very same holes? Wow, these people know no bounds of evil. Having many possible locations means the waste doesn't have to travel that far. Something the public seems to think is a major risk, further reducing costs. No, it's not a... You think transporting the most toxic waste on the planet might be a major risk. The use of modern drilling technologies allows the tunnels or drifts, using the mining term, to go horizontal, even have neat things like a plumber's trap to slant upward, making release even more unlikely. See figure. Wow. So maybe that's what the pyramids were. You know how they have those upward slanting things. America has only about, listen to this, folks, this will knock your socks off. We only have about, it's not an accurate number, but about 80,000 tons of spent nuclear fuel, which would nearly cover only a single football field. Oh, really? This guy is, I mean, honestly, I wonder if his tongue splits at the end of it, like the snake that he is. So it wouldn't require that many holes. And the gas and oil and gas industry has already done most of the work. Having drilled over 50,000 such horizontal wells this deep or deeper since the fracking craze began just after the turn of the millennium, Lord, I was right. They plan on using the fracking holes. These people are completely insane. Deep isolation boreholes could hold all the spent fuel we presently have. What are they going to do if we have an earthquake? What's the plan then? What do they think will happen to the nuclear waste if the earth moves? Do they really believe it's not going to get into our water table? Wow. Oh, good. Good news here at the end of the story. There are lots of hurdles to overcome before this technology can be adopted, especially convincing the public. You think? and their representatives that this is a good idea, that they will accept it in their state, and then getting a license for the disposal of nuclear waste from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Oh, that's not a hurdle. That's just a rubber stamp. But as a deep borehole expert, Ethan Bates, points out, the most important roadblock to this deep isolation technology is not technology or regulation. It is the fact that current federal law prohibits DOE from using privately developed geological disposal sites. On the other hand, human laws are a lot easier to change than physical laws. Wow. So that's coming. That's their plan. They plan on destroying the entire planet with nuclear waste, folks. When it appears in Forbes, so it is. Those rats. This is just unbelievable. Unbelievable. So let's have a little bit of nuclear education from nuclear education.ca, encyclopedia/nuclear waste. Exempt waste. Let's talk about what exempt waste is. Exempt waste is the type of waste that is also referred to as very low-level waste. This type of waste is any material that has so little radioactivity and thus poses no threat. Waste of this kind includes concrete from decommissioned nuclear power plants. Wow, really? They're reusing concrete from decommissioned nuclear power plants? Ah, so I wonder if there's a link. I'm going to open that up in a new tab, see if it'll show us what that means. No, it just gives us the... That's a bummer. Low-level waste. This type of waste is generated by facilities that use radioactive isotopes. This includes nuclear power industry, but it also includes medical facilities such as hospitals or radiology clinics. They use medical isotopes to assess and treat diseases like cancer. The radioactivity from low-level waste is far less intense than from spent fuel, but the volume is much greater. Intermediate waste, what's that? This waste has sufficient radiation that it requires shielding and needs to be handled more carefully than low-level waste. There is much level intermediate waste than low-level waste. This type of waste includes the metal around the fuel pellets if the fuel is reprocessed. High-level waste. This waste is the used fuel and material that has been drawn out of the used nuclear fuel. Exempt waste, as the name implies, isn't monitored as radioactive waste, but the rest of the other types are. Different levels of waste have different laws prescribing how each level is to be handled. You know, I'm so over these whole nuclear lies. I can't get over it. I think I am going to send a letter to this guy, Richard Miller. Because that is unbelievable that they are telling us that we should bury our nuclear waste in the ground. I think this calls for my rain stick. Hold on just a second. We're going to rebalance the energy in the room after that completely story that got my blood boiling. Because, man, just listening to them, their ideas of what they plan on doing, they have no regard. They're just going to dump nuclear waste and put it into tunnels, horizontal tunnels, not even vertical, but horizontal. And they think that it's not going to get in the groundwater. Earth Crising, Rising Up. That is a documentary everybody should see. It's about the uranium poisoning of a town. I think it is in Montana or North Dakota. And it's this family's effort to get a kidney for a child who is living on dialysis because she's been contaminated by nuclear waste. This is our reality, folks. I'm so glad I found this thing. This is a tube. Let me describe it to you. It's really kind of ornate. It's made out of clay, I think. And it has Somebody took some flowers or some leaves and impressed them all the way around it, and then kind of made it gray, put it black in the middle, and wiped it clean. So it's kind of tan with an inset of flowers and leaves. And then there's these nails that someone took and put in them. When it was hot, they stuck it in. And then at the bottom, they took the clay, and it was a long tube like the size of a paper towels, basically. And so what they did was they took a clay piece and plugged up the bottom, stuck some things inside there, because the nails actually are what hits the sound. And then they put it at the bottom and baked it. And it's such a cool tool. It's called a rain stick. I found it at a thrift store. I guess Crow, my guest, who said that I was kind of a natural shaman, probably is right, because I'm attracted to things like this. But this is like the most calming thing since I found it. It's super awesome. And I apologize that every day, day after day here, we talk about things that most people don't want to discuss. I bought a button from Eugene Peaceworks that says, say the things that most people think. Then I bought another button that says, ignore your rights and they will disappear. So this is why I speak out, and I don't mean to be so negative about this, but man, these kinds of stories just slip away. You actually have to search on, if you're, you know, going to any kind of news generator like Google or Bing or something, all you have to do is put in nuclear. And these nuclear stories, you can put an alert up, and you can find out about these stories, right? These are very, very, very important stories. Here's the Blue Ribbon Commission. This is from 2012. And this is when, you know, pro-nuke Obama really sold us out. He had an opportunity to do something different, and he did not. He stood in front of a camera and told us that everything was perfectly fine, don't worry about Fukushima, and then got in an airplane and went on a trip south to South America unexpectedly for 3 weeks with his family. So what a rat, for real. What a real rat. But I guess anybody who has to operate with these people, you have to be willing to play dirty. I guess his option was, do you want to be alive or do you want to be a rat? And so I guess he chose he wanted to be a rat. So listen to this. This is from warisboring.com. New documents raise questions about increased nuclear spending. The nuke agency is up to its old tricks. This was on Google. I have a nuclear alert on Google. This was one of the documents, May 22nd, 2018. There are many reasons to keep certain parts of the U.S. nuclear weapons complex a secret, but fraud, waste, and abuse run rampant when the mystique and awe of nuclear bombs gets in the way of effective oversight, and it is the taxpayer who ends up suffering. Not just the taxpayer, it's the entire planet, brother. It's all of us. The secrets to creating a nuclear explosion and the materials to do so are kept by the National Nuclear Security Agency, a semi-autonomous agency within the Department of Energy, and has a $1.2 trillion plan to build a new nuclear warheads and facilities over the next 30 years. But new documents obtained by the Project on Government Oversight discussing the life expectancy of nuclear weapon components show that the uranium cores may have a longer lifespan than originally thought. This may undermine some justifications for an expansive and expensive nuclear modernization plan. Although much of the documents are redacted, likely to keep safe the most suggestive details of the U.S. nuclear enterprise, the remaining details seem to suggest that initial lifespan estimates were too conservative. These initial estimates were partially used as justification for plans to build an expensive new facility, and revising plans based on these findings could result in billions of savings for taxpayers. But there is no getting around the fact that twice now the NNSA has either obscured the facts that would suggest a more limited capacity is all that's required, or pursued an expensive plan without knowing all the facts beforehand. In light of NNSA's rhetoric about the aging nuclear arsenal and the desperate need for more money to modernize, POGO endeavored to determine exactly what upgrades were truly needed to support a credible nuclear deterrent. Let me see what that POGO, Project on Government Oversight, that's POGO, POGO. I'll refer to them as POGO in this story. In 2013, we released a report that called for a study into the lifetime of uranium secondaries in order to determine what capacity would be required of a proposed new facility. A study would make clear how many of these secondaries would need to be manufactured in the new building. POGO's report on the proposed uranium processing facility highlighted how the public had been kept in the dark about this number, an important justification for continued and increased funding. At the time, a number of Energy Department sources told POGO several hundred warheads had already gone through the life extension process and would not need remanufactured secondaries. Initially, the NNSA had claimed publicly that it needed a big design, a big box design, a large facility that would replace several different buildings in the complex, and that had the capacity to remanufacture 160 to 200 secondaries per year. But just a few years later, the department's own stockpile stewardship and management plan stated that the need was really only 80. So why are we manufacturing 160? Why are we doing at least twice as much? Given this shift within the department, as well as a litany of design missteps, cost overruns, and poor project oversight, POGO recommended a lifetime study for uranium secondaries and a scaled-down design utilizing existing facilities. Shortly after POGO released our UPF report, the NNSA formed a red team to review the design. That review echoed many of POGO's findings and recommendations, including the need for a significant and sustained oversight, as well as immediately scrapping the big box design. Design efforts on the current big box single structure UPF concept should be stopped while a comprehensive reevaluation of program requirements and applicable design standards is undertaken, the report stated. The new documents from the time suggest that a study into the lifetimes of secondaries supported this decision. One of the newly obtained documents is a 2010 peer-reviewed analysis conducted by the Los Alamos National Laboratory in the life expectancy study of one nuclear warhead type, the W78. Let me click on that link and open it in a new tab. The review committee examined work and analysis done by the life expectancy team, charged with concluding how long these secondaries will remain effective. The review team warned against the life expectancy team's overly conservative estimate of uranium lifetimes, stating that being too conservative would result in significantly increased costs. Actual life expectancy for the W78 would appear longer than that predicted by the results shown in Figure 1. The peer review committee says this: understanding the W78 team's wish to ensure they have a conservative estimate of the life expectancy, the report states. That understanding? I don't know, that doesn't make sense to me, so I'm going to go back and read it again, okay? The peer review committee says this: understanding the W78 team's wish to ensure they have a conservative estimate of the life expectancy, the report states. Still incomprehensible. The committee acknowledged the importance of erring on the side of caution when estimating how aging will affect the power or yield of a nuclear weapons, but warned that being too cautious would not provide useful or accurate information. The peer review committee is concerned that a too conservative determination of degraded yield will lead to a life expectancy that is unrealistically too short. Pogo obtained a follow-up report from 2013 that included the similar findings. During disassembly, significant abnormal conditions were confirmed. However, these conditions are not expected to have a significant effect on W78 secondary nuclear performance beyond that which has been previously determined. Ultimately, the NNSA abandoned the big box design and, with the help of significant bipartisan congressional oversight, led by the Senate Energy and Water Appropriations Subcommittee Chairman Lamar Alexander and Ranking Member Dianne Feinstein, the smaller UPF plan has moved forward without the many mistakes of its larger predecessor. But this is the second time the NNSA has claimed it needed a large, modern replacement facility without the data to back it up. NNSA's pattern of exaggerating spending needs. New subtitle in this story. A remarkable similar situation occurred with the agency's planned plutonium operations replacement facility. The NNSA claimed the proposed chemistry and metallurgical research replacement nuclear facility needed to be able to manufacture 450 plutonium cores per year. But after a lifetime study found that they can last for over 150 years without significantly degrading the number plummeted to less than 80 per year, dramatically decreasing what would be required of the new building. So this actually speaks very dramatically to what Jerome and I were talking about. Jerome was saying that they needed to create new plutonium, but this actually states that these cores actually last longer, these new studies, the studies they did in 10 and 13. Back to the story, folks. Congress ultimately canceled the facility when cost overruns and delays made it impossible to continue, and the NNSA is now pursuing a scaled-down approach. But there's no getting around the fact that twice now, the NNSA has either obscured facts that would suggest a more limited capacity is all that's required, or has pursued an expensive plan without knowing all the facts beforehand. Either explanation is unacceptable exploitation of taxpayer dollars. You think? That's what the whole nuclear industry is, folks. Exploitation of the taxpayer dollars. Because we do not need nuclear industry. This whole thing, if we need to have it, it's clean and safe, is a freaking lie. It is a complete lie. Until they understand the technology, the way they do it right now, it is a catastrophic mess. And I don't care if James Conca says there's only one football field of it. One football field is enough to actually destroy our entire country, you dumb jerk. And that is probably a grotesque underestimation. One football field, but how tall are the tanks? How far up? What a jerk he is. Honestly, I just so disrespect James Conca. It's unbelievable. Him and Donald Trump are in the same bad guys boat for my world. Bad, bad people that, God, I mean, honestly, I know it's bad, but I really do pray that some people have heart attacks every day that we wake up to the news to find out they're dead. Honestly, I hate to say this, but when, you know, never mind, I'm not going to say it. I'll get back to the story. There's no doubt that certain components of nuclear warheads do not need to be replaced due to the effects of aging. But the most sensitive, complex, and expensive to produce, the uranium and plutonium components, do not always need to be completely remanufactured. It is part of the NNSA's mission to better understand the effects of time on the many different pieces that fit together to form the nuclear weapons complex. And ensuring that the agency has the resources it needs to maintain the nuclear arsenal is essential for national security. But it's also vitally important to look closely at what is being done in the name of national security and what a modern arsenal should look like. Instead of pursuing the most expensive and expansive option, the NNSA should be looking for opportunities to consolidate its sprawling nuclear complex. Here we go. Smaller, more effective nuclear weapons complex. This is why they're building the SMRs, as I think that somehow they tie into this. Hang on, folks. Let me get some water. By the way, I want to thank our listeners. To those of you who are listening to this story and can appreciate me reading you these nuclear articles, I want to thank KEPW.org for carrying our radio show, and to the listeners who listen to us at late night in Eugene, Oregon, who decide to tune in and hear this stuff. By the way, you can come and meet me if you want. I am going to be at the event, all three events with Jeff Cohen this week. I will be Thursday at the Bijou, All Governments Lie. I will be there, and pretty easy to spot. I'll be with a friend of mine, a girlfriend of mine. She's like, I don't know, 6 foot. Three. So a pretty short woman and a tall person will be there. You'll see us. And then I'm going to be there at on the 23rd at the U of O. He's having a conversation. And then on Monday at Mozzie's restaurant here in town, they are giving KEPW 30% if you can download the voucher, which I can recommend you do. Bring in your voucher, and they will give KEPW 30% of whatever you order on the 30th, the 28th. That's Monday the 28th. Let's get back to this story. I was starting to spit nails there. Can you tell? Smaller and more effective nuclear weapons complex. Many of the issues in NSA faces again and again, massive cost overruns on large-scale projects, delays, and largely avoidable mistakes, are the result of a sprawling complex with poor oversight of those who manage it. The NNSA's 8 facilities are located all across the country, and most are managed by different consortiums of similar big-name defense contractors like Lockheed Martin Corporation, Bechtel National, and Battelle, making it the largest civilian contracting agency in the federal government. The NNSA's 8 facilities. Do we know where they are? I do not. So hold on, Pecan. I am going to take a look on. I'm going to actually see. I wonder if Google Maps would tell us that. Let's just ask the Google Maps, and I'll go back to the story. Sorry about this, guys, but that makes me wonder, where are the 8 NNSA nuclear facilities? Put that in the no results found in the Google map. Okay, so we just have to ask the Google and put it into images, because that's usually how I find stuff on the Google maps. Because if you look for the stories, I don't know, not very good. Beep. Let's see what happens. Map. Okay, so there they are, NNSA. Okay. And they are dotted all across the South. It's almost like they go in the lower half of the country, actually. It's very interesting. If you guys were to see this, like if you take a line and draw it through the United States horizontally across it, all of these facilities are below, are in the South. None of them are in the North. Very interesting. Huh. Well, I don't think so. Let's get back to this story. Okay. But the federal field offices managing these contractors do not effectively communicate with one another or share lessons learned, according to a recent report by the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine. This makes it difficult for the agency to ensure work is not being duplicated, that the facilities are running as intended, and that the lines of authority are clear. And you know what? I read a report on my YouTube channel called Testing the Safety Culture of the IAEA, which is the safety culture model used at every single nuclear facility around the world. Do you know this report was done in 2013 and it had never been tested? And when it got tested, it was tested at a nuclear facility in Spain. And when they tested the safety culture model, only one area passed. 50%, all the others failed out of their 8 types of bars that they held. So no wonder. The report also found that the NNSA describes multiple processes and activities with no analysis of what problems will be solved, what successes would look like, and how progress is to be tracked. Let's read that again. The report also found that the NNSA describes multiple processes and activities with no analysis of what problems will be solved and what success would look like and how progress is to be tracked. These issues merely compound problems like overlapping capabilities and a poor relationship between the NNSA and contractors. Why do we have a poor relationship between the NNSA and the contractors? We're giving them money. What did they say this amount of money is that we're pouring into this system? $13 billion, wasn't it? In the billions? I'm going to go back up to the top of this article, you guys. $1.2 trillion. And they're telling us they have a bad relationship with the contractors. We're giving them $1.2 trillion. Time to get new contractors. Pull the plug. It's long past time to review the department's capacity to ensure it's properly sized and situated to meet mission needs. Currently, the Energy Department is still operating with supersized Cold War mentality when it comes to its facilities. Comparatively, the Department of Defense has convened several defense-based closures and realignment commissions, independent entities established to reassess the efficacy of military installations after the Cold War. These reviews allow the Defense Department to reorganize its facilities to be more effective, along with garnering savings of $13 billion per year. $13 billion. Flint, Michigan, let's remind you, has no decent water running in it right now. Our schools are crumbling. I live below a dam with a D rating. If we had an earthquake, I have 20 minutes to gather up my stuff and find higher ground. And this would save $13 billion. Wow. Wow, the Defense Department. Do you think we're getting that $13 billion that the Defense Department figured out how to save? No, it's going to the rich 1%. Thank you, Donald Trump and the Republicans. In 2011, Pogo obtained a Department of Revenue memo that harshly criticized the Energy Department's reluctance to downsize the nuclear weapons lab. The memo was written by one of the countless commissions established to review the role of nuclear weapon laboratories. It stated that reports and reviews since 1995 have found the complex is bigger and more expensive than it should be, and that there is excessive duplication of capabilities among the labs. The review also took a look at the root cause of that growth. The reviewers found that direct lobbying by the directors of the NNSA labs has pushed funding levels even above Cold War levels. Ultimately, the commission concluded the department's reluctance to consolidate its lab system would be a disservice to the American people. Around the same time, the Department of Energy Inspector General released a report formally recommending a BRAC-like review of the national laboratories. 2 years later, in 2013, the IG himself testified before the House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology Oversight Committee to recommend a realignment commission again. We recommend that the department, using a BRAC-style formation, analyze, realign, consolidate laboratory operations to reduce indirect costs and, as a result, provide greater funds for science and research, he said. Yet, despite these constant warnings, the recommendations for improvement from all corners of the nuclear complex world, the NNSA plans to move full steam ahead with their incredibly expensive upgrade plan, a plan that is partially justified by rhetoric suggesting that age has significantly deteriorated parts of the complex. Without an independent study, it's impossible to know if these claims are true. And the NNSA track record, Congress would be more likely to justify in asking questions. Before pouring billions of dollars into this effort, Congress should commission an independent scientific-led study by the Jason Advisory Group to ensure NNSA's future spending plans that match up with the overall national security needs. This story first appeared on Project on Government Oversight. Wow. So, War is Boring reprinted the whole thing. And that's what Google popped up. Not the Project on Government Oversight. Let's go to their website. Wonder what other nuclear stuff they report on. Man, you guys, why do I feel like I need to apologize? I know at least it's 8 o'clock in the morning here. I think the people in Eugene, Oregon get a little bit of a break because they get to listen to this stuff late at night. You know, but people on the East Coast or I guess in Europe, you know, it's the afternoon. It makes it more palatable. But it is 8 o'clock in the morning here in Eugene, Oregon, and it is actually a beautifully blue day early in the morning. No lines in the sky so far, but we know it's coming. By the afternoon, we'll have clouds if they've decided they want us to be cloudy. That's the way it's going to be. It's completely insane, the world that we live in, to be honest. It is completely insane. There's a press release on this POGO, Project on Government Oversight. This is a very interesting, I'm just reading straight. This is the first time I've been to this website, and I think I'm going to save it. Because it's pretty amazing. I don't know if you guys have ever been there. It's POGO.org. The headlines, Inside the Cutthroat World of Billion-Dollar Military Supply Contracts, May 8th. Press release, acting head of Consumer Protection Office likely violated anti-lobbying laws, that we know. 13 CPB employees arrested for corruption in this administration. Enhanced evasion techniques, oh my God. That's from the last blog. Paper cuts, cashing in on connections. Why Congress inquiries Trump federal investigations? Oh, why congressional inquiries Trump federal investigations? That was a story done on May 11th. So this one is very interesting. Inside the cutthroat world of billion-dollar military contracts. I think it's all related to the nuclear industry. This is all, I cannot help but believe that this is an intentional attack on humanity, to be honest. Our military is completely out of control. So I'm going to go to KEPW. I see we have 10 minutes left. And or maybe I'll just do this. We can go to the KEPW website, but I want to read about Jeff Cohen, who is Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. And that is such a great website. But, you know, one of the things about this, and he's doing this movie that's called, we talked about it yesterday, right? He's going to be here in Eugene, Oregon. And I can't wait to talk to this guy. I'm actually ready to watch the movie and ask him, how do we get people that are like professional activist like he is. I mean, I guess he considers himself a journalist. But how do we get them to pay attention to what's going on in Fukushima? Because what happens is people feel like that we're just sort of talking about something that is not true while people are dying. Kids are dying and we're not even being told they're being erased from their roles. So one of these links that I linked on, let me see the secondary, here it is. One of the links, the peer-reviewed study from the Los Alamos lab, pretty interesting. Man, this whole thing is a deleted article. Redacted. It's almost entirely redacted. It's a government document that was related in that story. When I look at it, it's all totally redacted. So here's another little story that might make your hair crawl. Go get your coffee and have a sip. I'm not going to read this, but this is just totally hilarious. Russian nuclear Titanic floating power plant arrives in the Arctic. They did have to call it the nuclear Titanic. What the heck does that mean? Russia's floating nuclear power plant, dubbed the nuclear Titanic, has arrived in the Arctic port of Murmansk ahead of its mission in spite of criticism from environmental campaigners. Wow. It looks like a nuclear power facility on a big, gigantic boat, you guys. It's unbelievable. I can't read this. It just makes me spit nails. What do they think is going to happen if something happens to that? What is this going to do? Union of Concerned Scientists wrote an article on May 21st, yesterday. Closing North Korea's nuclear test site, David Wright, co-director and senior scientist at the Union of Concerned Scientists. Of the surprising announcements North Korea has made in recent weeks, one of the most surprising was its statement that it would not only end nuclear tests, but shut down its nuclear site with the international observers watching. What should we make of this? Pyongyang said it would allow journalists from the United States, Russia, Britain, and North Korea to watch the destruction of the tunnels of Pyongyi sometime this week. These tunnels dug into the mountains are where North Korea conducts its nuclear tests. U.S. intelligence says that North Korea is already dismantling this test site, and satellite photos of the site confirm there are a number of facilities that have already been torn down. More like blown down, guy. If North Korea leader Kim Jong-un is serious about limiting and perhaps eventually eliminating its nuclear and missile capabilities in return for economic engagement with the outside world, the question is how he demonstrates that seriousness. Public shutting down of his test site is a meaningful step in the right direction and an interesting way to try to send that message. It's true shutting down Punggye-ri test site does not prevent North Korea from ever testing again. If negotiations fail or situations change in the future, it could decide to tunnel at a different site and build the required infrastructure needed to test. But it's meaningful and pretty dramatic action nonetheless. For one thing, part of the current site is no longer usable because some tunnels collapsed after previous tests. Experts agree that a couple of tunnels at the site remain usable. They also agree that disabling the facilities would take time to reverse, perhaps months or longer. This reminds me that North Korea's decision in 2008 to disable its nuclear reactor, Yongbyon, by blowing up the cooling tower and letting foreign reporters film the event. This was at a time when negotiations with the United States seemed to be moving ahead. A few years later, after negotiations had stalled, Pyongyang built a new cooling system and was able to restart the reactor. But disabling the reactor was still a meaningful action, since it kept the reactor from operating for several years. What's next? North Korea's statement last week raised the possibility that Kim was walking back his various offers. Yet Kim's criticism was focused on statements by John Bolton and others about the need for North to denuclearize as an early step of the negotiation. This is an approach Pyongyang has consistently rejected, calling instead for a step-by-step process that helps build trust needed for additional steps. Oh, my God. Trump's subsequent statements disavowing the so-called Libyan model of disarmament seems intended to help repair the situation, but his later statement then appeared to threaten destruction of North Korea if talks failed. That could have exactly the opposite effect and lead Kim to cancel or delay the talks. In the meantime, China has urged Pyongyang to continue with the talks. So whether or not the summit will continue as planned remains uncertain. An important indicator will be whether North Korea goes ahead with destroying tunnels at its test site this week. So I guess we will see if they're going to do it. I personally don't believe they're going to do it. I think the whole thing about saying that they are going to do it means that it was just lip service, frankly. I think that was a political move by Trump to get people off of the current news of, you know, that Mueller is circling around him. I mean, to be honest, he's a complete criminal and his behavior acts like a criminal. You know, every criminal goes into court and says, the DA planted evidence on me. They're doing this to me. They've trapped me. Well, they haven't trapped you. You've trapped yourself by your dishonest, disgusting behavior. Which is really who he is. He's a disgusting human being. I don't know how we can, honestly, you guys, one of the things that I have to say about this current set is that it's actually just more in our face. You know, Obama smiled at us and made us feel good, right? And George Bush, he was just like everybody's brother, right? We had to believe him. But this one, he's just so despicable, you can't swallow the pablum unless you want to be completely brainwashed and let a sexist, misogynistic, racist pig rule your heart. I don't know how we can... I don't know how we're going to survive. He's working really hard to undermine the rule of law in the United States. So it's going to be up to the Republicans to stand up to this guy. You know, and it's going to be interesting to see how the activist movements really come along. Here is something from NukeWatch.org on these nuclear sites. This is so incredible. The nuclear labs, significant sites with instances of misconduct. This is the map. This is really unbelievable. What does this map say? Instances of significant misconduct. Jeez Louise. There is so much misconduct. Hanford, Nevada National Security Site, Lawrence Livermore Lab, Sandia National Laboratories, Los Alamos National Laboratories, Pantrax Plant, National Security Campaign, Y-12 National Laboratory, and Savannah River Site. Dotted all throughout the country. The problem is with misconduct is means that you're killing people. When you have misconduct with nuclear waste, you are killing people. That's what these people are doing. That's what these bad guys are doing. This is why it takes, and Dave's right, take 8 minutes a day, educate yourself, learn about this stuff. And I appreciate those of you who are listening early in the morning on the West Coast here to this radio show, because these conversations are not easy to have while you're having your first cup of coffee in the morning. But I don't know about you. I wake up every day and wonder, is Mount Fuji blown up, or did they have a big earthquake over there, or what's going to happen? Because if something happens on the other side of the planet, we're not going to find out about it. I mean, look at the... Fukushima is in a nuclear meltdown, and they're starting to build an Olympic city around it. Like, it's outrageous. They want people to go to the Olympics and sit in a stadium with wood reclaimed from the Fukushima disaster, from the Fukushima prefecture, that got spewed with radioactive contamination. And they'll say, oh, well, they've tested it, so it's very low. But you're going to be sitting your organs right on a bench. Even anyone going to the Olympics in 2020 is off their complete rocker. That is not a place you need to go, you know. And in fact, I don't think people should travel to Japan. I think Japan needs to be evacuated. I think, yes, it's that bad. And it is an ongoing disaster because these nuclear meltdowns have not stopped. At least in Chernobyl, they sectioned people off. And, you know, they've been able to cap it or do something, but it's not spewing out into the air all the time. Well, it is a lot, but not like it is in Fukushima. So, well, for goodness sakes, you guys, we're coming up onto the very last minute of the show. I want to thank all of our listeners at KEPW.org, all the listeners at UCY.TV, and all of our listeners on YouTube, on the YouTube channel UCY-TV. We really appreciate all of you listening to our show and sharing our information. And also be advised that at the end of June, I am definitely going to change the title of this show. And so there's going to be some changes coming up. We're not real sure how that's all going to work out. But the bottom line is, we're still going to tell you, put your courage feet on. Take some action. Do what you can do. We'll talk to you guys later. I'll report to you what Pete DeFazio's office says on Monday, or Friday, I guess. Take care, you guys.